spectacular, it was very spectacular things just didn't happen. And apocalyptic declarations such as these that follow were just too picturesque and too spectacular for words. But actually, what does happen in the world is terribly spectacular. You have no idea how dramatic and theatrical. I mean, the best, the wildest movie you see, say, of battle, that sort of thing, I'll have no understatement for what actually happened as far as actually being spectacular. So you can't believe how spectacular things are when they happen and so forth. And so we're told that it was so in the days of Noah. People could not believe it as it was then. We do not believe it. We cannot believe it. It is absolutely too fantastic for words until it happens. And then when it happens, everybody shrugs their shoulders and says, well, of course, that's the way it is, you know. It's like a giraffe. You see, the farmer sees a giraffe and says, I wouldn't believe that even if I saw it. But when he sees the giraffe, then so I see one. The things that you thought were absolutely impossible, once they happen, almost immediately become commonplace. That's why we can take little comfort in the millennialist and apocalyptic promises, say, of the Adventist, the millennialist sect. Today, the coming Christ is going to be very spectacular. Well, it is. It's going to be a tremendous show, but that doesn't make any difference. Show or not show, who cares about that? That's just incidental as far as that goes. Remember, what the important thing is not what becomes of us, but what we become. Yeah, I got the rule, Brother Holland. So, let's start with the 31st verse here. Now, it's the Lord speaking to the apostles. This is back in that dispensation now. Men standing in this generation, that's the generation of the apostles, that shall see an overflowing scourge, a desolating sickness shall cover the land. Well, did it happen? Well, of course, within that generation, the plague began, and then by the time of Marcus Aurelius, he came to the empire in 120, within 90 years, from a third to a half of the human race had been wiped out in the plague. Like we can't even imagine. It left whole lands desolate and then never recovered again. The whole art of Asia Minor, for example, was the richest. All of North Africa, the great grass country, Libya, which today of course is simply pure desert, they became desolate and were never inhabited again. Whole Eastern Mediterranean was that way. But the plague was a very real one. And it actually happened. It talks about, I've always been puzzled by that in our own time. It says, a desolating plague shall come, a desolating sickness shall come over the whole earth. I've never had any doubt, well, that's the Christmas winter. I've never had any doubt, though, that would have something to do with cancer. Well, because it's the mystery of our time. The same thing, there's a marvelous work written on the 30 Years' War, and the plague at that time, the plague is 1348, the Black Plague in Europe. They were completely mysterious. They were absolutely mysterious. Nobody knows to this day what causes them. And whenever they look together, they're completely mystified. It has to do with something with the respiratory system, and people break out with certain symptoms, always due to high fevers and so forth. But it wiped out Europe at that time, and it happened again and again, these plagues and these tubes. I say it's Adolf Friedel's book I was referring to. It had a weed-like quality. It would spread through towns, it would miss one house completely and wipe out the next gratuitously. Some would be taken and some left. As the Lord says, it was, as it was in the days of Noah, and also it will be that two men are working in the field and one will be taken, and two men on the housetop, one will be taken and so forth. And it's a very mysterious thing. But this is a phenomenon that actually takes place. Well, we go on now. But my disciples shall stand in holy places and be not moved. Talk about that dispensation. Who were they and what happened? While the wicked curse God and die. Now, what kind of literature does this always produce? Remember the plague in the middle of the 14th century produced all sorts of interesting phenomena. It produced certain wild social demonstrations, all of them down the Rhine, all over France, all over Germany, the Totentanks in Germany, who were the dynasty of conquering France. All of a sudden, in villages everywhere, The women would take all of their clothes off and go down and dance in the ring. And the men would swear. I mean, they would just do it everywhere. That's a strange thing. Now, this happened earlier. This happened in the 3rd century B.C. when the ancient world was wiped out the same way. It was called the Abderite fever. And then strange things would happen. Strange phenomenon that occurs everywhere. I wrote a long study on this one, ancient modern system. In fact, I have one coming out in a dense publication this year sometime. But this is what they would do. Everybody, all of a sudden, it always had to be on a hot day, though, a day. Everybody would take all their furniture and all their junk, all their families, and make a big pile in the market, in the center of the marketplace, the center of town. And then they put it a fire, and then everybody jumped in the fire, and that was that. Unaccountable, they call it a fever. Everybody sort of went mad that way. It's a strange thing. As Rostov says, everybody simply lost their balance. It comes to a time when the whole world is serving. You know, just look around today and see what strange things happen. Can same people be doing the things we're doing today? The strange thing here. But this one now, we have to move on, of course. But my disciples shall stand in holy place and not be moved. But among the wicked, men shall lift up their voice and truth come out. Now, this particular time the Lord is talking about, say, this is the play in the time of Marcus Aurelius. What kind of literature did it produce? Well, we have a great one. The only original literature the Romans produced was satire. The satire is always that. It always has a bitter. But there is no sense, and cursing God and dying, cynical to the highest degree, but utterly negative. And the only thing, it's a sardonic laughter. And so you go right through the, down the list, right from the time of Christ, you have Persis, then you have Horace, and then you have later, then you have Juvenal and Martial, as things get worse and worse, and they become more cynical, more desperate. There's something almost gentle about Horace, who is contemporary at the time of Christ, a good friend of the Emperor Justus, and Persis earlier, and then you finally get in Nero's time, Petronius, utterly, and then Lucan is unbelievably horrible. I mean, how terribly negative they get. Well, that was what they did actually curse God and die. They die with curses on their lips. The literature of utter despair. The Euboean discourse, the 22nd discourse, is a good example of it, where he visited his own island, the great island of Euboea that runs all along the east side of Greece. He was raised there. Then he went back later and found out, there were nothing but a few hunters living on the island. What were among the richest? And it was very large. It was the largest island in Euboea then. In fact, it's so close to the mainland, it's connected by just by a short bridge. Then it was wiped out. Everybody just went. He said, what happened? They all committed suicide. Everyone said, if there is an earthquake, it kills us all pretty soon, we'll all die. And they made all sorts of jokes about it like that. Everybody was saying, oh, I wish an earthquake would come and kill everybody in Antioch, and I'd be the richest man in town. And this is the kind of jokes people were making everything. These are horrible things. They're going, oh, wait a minute, you guys. No, it's very well documented. Very large literary records of this sort of insanity that struck the ancient world, but it fell again at the Middle Ages. Well, and then we see the upheavals of nature. The next. There should be earthquakes in diverse places. You think of Pompeii and Herculaneum, but they can't compare with what was happening in Asia Minor, when the earth never stopped shaking for 100 years. It wiped them completely out. The earthquakes became extremely frequent, extremely violent. Everywhere. But again, we know we go through earthquake periods. But in diverse places, here and there, spot. It'll hit here and then hit there, and you never know where it's going to hit next. Yet men will, and what is the result? The people repent when they see these desperate times. No, they don't. They harden their hearts again. And they'll take up the sword, they get desperate, they become frantic. Social stability disappears when people feel so insecure, nobody trusts anyone else, and they start fighting each other all the time. And they take up their swords against each other, and they will kill one another. Unreasonable. But look what happened since the last time we met. I mean, what's happened in California? So we don't know where that would end. What if the gas was completely shut off then for a little while? People are already a little fired. People shut. few days ago, one service, they just started to get there. People got desperate, they got irresponsible, suddenly they go wild. I mean, these human beings, they start acting not like these, they start acting that way. But it's a horrible thing. This general, what we have is general disintegration and dissolution in society. When things start coming apart at the seams, then these phenomena follow, and the upheavals of nature count for a lot more, too. They become treatable. And the disciples are troubled by this. Now, this is the Lord telling, they're sitting on the Mount of Olives, and they're looking at the temple that's going to be destroyed, and they naturally, if this is the future, the apostles are really upset. Well, what will it be doing? Now, when I, the Lord, had spoken these words unto my disciples, they were troubled and understood this though. Why did he want to scare the daylights out of them? This is a constant 40-day thing that the Lord visits after the resurrection. See, the apostle asked what's going to happen. He doesn't give them a happy future. He holds forth no future at all. Their joy, their comfort is all in the resurrection when he comes back. It's a dark period. And he says, what comes next is going to be troubled. So it was the time of Christ. And I said unto them, be not troubled, for when all these things come to pass, then you know that the promises which have been made unto you shall be fulfilled. Now this is the good side of it. These things do come to pass, they're fulfilled, but no matter how terrifying, is your assurance that all is going to stay according to schedule. If these things weren't happening, I'd be very doubtful about the gospel. You know, we were raised up on these things, because the last time people say, well, we've been told these things since we were children, and nothing has really come to pass, nothing that way. Well, it hasn't been so long as we said the last time. If Joseph Smith had lived as long as Joseph F. Smith, we all knew, he would have been able to baptize President Kimball with a few years older, too. He was just in that generation, but that's yeah. It's been a long time when they finally start building up, these things are around, and you know the biological phenomenon that's putting there today. We've got so far into the pond is only half there. See, every day the scum on the pond doubles, and you get the 29th day, you say, look, we still have half our forests, we still have half our minerals, and so forth. The 28th day, the 29th day, the next day, there's nothing. Because it's doubled again, that's what happens. As the power, as we have less and less to destroy and to exploit, we become more and more efficient in our means of doing it. So we have unspeakably sophisticated means now of attacking whales. I mean by radar, high-powered cannons, electronics, and everything else. I have to tear. As we get better and better, more efficient and more efficient, he's talking about these things. But their promises made to you, they'll also be fulfilled. The promises aren't all bad along the other side. I'm not telling you this just to scare you for no reason whatever. There'd be no point whatever just to keep pouring it on with this morbid fascination with the terrors and horrors of heaven. As the fat boy says in the Barnes and Noble, I want to make their flesh creep. The purpose of the gospel is not to make our flesh creep. But when the light, now comes the happy part. Those promises include not only the bad news, but the good news. After that, then, the light shall begin to break forth. It's going to be a restoration. What you think about this and so forth. Like under the parable I show you, then he tells about the fig tree. You can tell the approaching summer by the condition of the shoots and the leaves of the fig tree, and they shall serve as a warning sign, but they shall also gladden the heart of those who want the Lord to come and put things right. The only way things can go after that. See, when things reach such a climax, such a peak, what can happen? What can we do? Men can't help themselves, they're in a deadlock. We can't pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, our own counsel. Well, look at you. No people more shrewd or dedicated or informed than economists today, they appear on nothing. And diametrically opposing Nobel Prize laureates will give completely opposite analysis and cures and everything else. What can we do? We're told, these signs are leading us up to the coming of the Lord. We'll be able to accept him. September 5th, and he that feareth me shall be looking forth to the great day of the Lord's coming and for the signs of the coming of man. And here we go now. Here's the more. These are the signs. Well, we notice that the culminating terror here, and like to call it that, well, the 40th verse, they shall be signs and wonders, for they shall be shown forth in the heavens above and in the earth beneath. And there again, and it tells us, remember when these signs and wonders increased in the book of Mormon, before the crucifixion, before the coming of Christ, people got used to it. They didn't think much of it. They don't know that. So we see those things, things that they could walk. Once these things happen, it's not the spectacle of being in front of death. After all, Hollywood put up on a space spectacular, a super spectacular, you know, sold almost anything. Well, there isn't any climax after some of the subjects in the coming years. What do we do then? The signs and wonders shown forth, and do we have them today? Look at the news. The last month or 6 weeks has brought forth. I mean, regarding the future, regarding the satellite, regarding the solar flare, things that we never knew before, regarding the X-ray universe. Just like that, suddenly, you know, the most staggering thing you can imagine. And everybody's going, so what? Well, people didn't even hear about it. I remember once in Berkeley, I had an honors class, and there's all these questions and so forth, and we were leaving Galileo to the Dutch Christina, and he was writing about the crater of the moon, about the crater of the moon. This was the day that the whole front page of the Chronicle discovered this picture of the rear side of the moon. The Russians had climbed it, had a satellite around, and they photographed the rear side of the moon. Absolutely staggering sight. Nobody ever knew we'd ever see the other side of the moon. I never thought I'd ever see it. Because Christ came in all the time, kept up about it, and so forth, and asked him how many, we've all seen the moon, of course, here they live in California, all these observatories around, open to the public, etc. And you know, not one person in that class has ever seen the moon from a telescope. They didn't care. They didn't care. They threw the moon way up there. They didn't care about the moon. This is supposed to be all this general education, Western civilization, modern man, sophistication, all that crap. hadn't registered at all. I was unbelievable. So I went staggering out there. I'd seen another miracle. I was very, very impressed. And that would be possible. But these signs are really there. The signs in the heavens are marvelous. And we shrug our shoulders and dig ourselves in deeper. Notice, and they shall behold, blood and fire. You look at the TV and you'll see the blood and fire and the vapors of smoke. And the vapors of smoke. First, in the book of Mormon, we're told there shall be a vapor of smoke from the entire world. And then you see, well, is that pollution, which is very effectively coming, is actually dampening the sun throughout the entire world today, because it's polluting all the oceans throughout the entire extent, and entire Gulf Coast, in the most remote parts of the Pacific. They were sitting by Foster's Garden, whether it was in the Atlantic, whether it was in the rain, there they were, totally right next to the surface, so they could see what was there. There were oil, fox, and goats, floating ones, and with all sorts of stuff out there in there. But these things happen, it seems. This is the vapors of smoke. And before the day of the Lord shall come, the sun shall be dark and the moon shall be turned dark, and the stars fall below the sun. Then your doctor is definitely pure material there, which darkens the sun, but gives the moon a ruddy color. That would be pretty thick. Of course, this happens when there's a great deal of volcanic activity. And we're at the Krakatoa there for 10 years, brilliant red sunrises and sunsets due to dust in the volcanic dust in there. They get thick enough, and only if it's the red rays get through, and utilizes the moon. And the stars fall into men, and we do go to showers during the budget. And we just do the inspection of the satellite, they call it. We come to learn about it, and this is the time, we call it,
All of a sudden, he mentions after the apostasy, there is going, the light's going to break again, that at the very time when the light breaks again, the dark will be destroyed, then will come these terrible things, and then he says, the remnant will be gathered unto this place. This is Jerusalem, but he's still in Jerusalem. That means Jesus for God being gathered there, and they are a remnant. But the world didn't happen. The world is going by water. Again, a thing that you use is utterly, I mean, civilized, and a thing like that can't happen. I mean, obviously, utterly impossible. There it was. And then they shall look for me, then they shall look for me. And behold, I will come. They shall see me, the clouds of heaven, bold with power and great glory, and all the holy angels, and he that watches not for me, shall be cut off. Why? The arm of the Lord shall fall with a very heavy arm. Destruction, whether by natural or human or war, it's the arm of the Lord's power. Remember, his arm is things in heaven with all his destruction, and will fall on enemies of the world. And it certainly has to be the scope and the efficiency of what, well, I mean, the destruction is the general terror now, it's going on with the cause of sickness and so forth. If you wrote about that in science fiction, it's if you're very deal for doing this. I mean, this is 2 years ago. The thing is that one half of the world picks up the other, and COVID starts to renew this situation. And it survived. And yet, both diligently preparing to go all out. Something like that, but it's terrible to do that. Well, this answers that question. So, how, see, the answer asks, well, how long do we have to wait? They want the good news. How long do we have to wait for that? Wherefore, if he is flesh, then he is flesh, you know. That generation is going to pass away. Don't let that word be. If you slept in peace, blessed are you. But as you now behold me and know that I am, here is the time they show me. So just as you're talking to me now, and you see me here, I'll come down to do the same thing to you. And you shall come unto me, and your soul shall live unto the redemption, shall be perfected, and the saints shall come forth from the four quarters of the earth. Notice here, for the God is true, but your soul shall live and be perfected. It's very similar. It's just a certain amount of stuff and a gold system. Now, here, with the great destruction, the interesting thing happens. Then shall the arm of the Lord be revealed to all nations. And notice, the earth is clear to the face. It takes it back to time to see it. And so, here again, to see it. We have the angelic sunset. So they came and went. And in the notice, and in the process of time, all the righteous were caught up. And taken as it goes to another sphere, and it takes from here, and never takes the general destruction. No one is the people who are destroyed in the flood. There was a Christ program, you met on others were engaged in the for a long time, and all who would accept were caught up, and were taken to a place of safety. And then the Lord cut loose. Then the waters descended, and the waters rose, and so forth. It's sort of clearing a field of fire for destruction. And when this happens, then, after that, notice, your soul shall live in the redemption and be perfected, and the saints shall come forth, then a return from the four quarters of the earth. Then shall the arm of the Lord fall on the nations after the conspiracy of them. And then the thing is put on the Mount of Olives, yes, on this mount, he is on the Mount of Olives, sitting down in the temple. And it shall feed his plain, and the earth of temple, and he is doing so, and he is dead. For it has been tremendous earthquakes in that part of the world. That's what we need to see about it on that. It's unlikely to have an average of 2 good earthquakes a year, riding on that fault on the earth there, and a real under there. So what do you think for the earth? An 8 point, what do you think for the earth? Why is there anything else? So you can put Antioch, great city. Totally destroyed by the earthquake in the 4th century. Totally, there's nothing left at all. He says, the old-fashioned Christians, the people of the old church, which is quite quaint, They run down the sewers up to the top of Mount Avalon, and they have a clock there, which they say needs to be kept, for the Lord comes to give. Because they first were coming in, as you said, on the Mount Avalon, to the reception place, and that's the time. After that, they were in the temple, and they came to the But there's a Mount Avalon from which the Lord traditionally, the Lord left. Well, and the Lord contended for them on this mountain, the Mount Avalon. And the voice of the Lord reaches the end of the earth, and all are placed in mourning. You know, it's usually for the rest. And all the ends of the earth shall drift, and the nations of the earth shall mourn, the day that last shall see their fall. And calamities are coming among us. This whole section is what he is referring to. The great thing. And the stories of the kings and those that have watched for iniquity shall be cast down and healed to fire. Meaning, the person watched for iniquity, just from Isaiah 29 and 20, where it's sometimes for a woman. A woman there to be brought to that people. And it's watched for in what sense? You either watch for it to detect it in others, because of that sort of thing that the devil is the devil, or you watch for it for chances to engage with yourself. Either way, it's commit to this, whether you're watching for this because you keep getting on the fun, or whether you're watching it so that you can nail somebody and follow them in that season and so forth. You're watching for this too. The Lord doesn't like it to have our minds and our thoughts set on that. And it's searching it out, whether it was scandalized me or But then if you won't look at the event, as far as that goes, and he identifies himself to the Jews, those exactly as he does to the Levites. And the truth to give to him here is the same way he identifies himself to Joseph Smith. In the grove, and they that know me shall know that I am the Lord, for I will say unto them, anybody says to them, these are the words that the Lord promised me in the house of my friends. I am he who is lifted up, I am Jesus that was crucified, I am the Son of God. Those are his first words to Joseph Smith, as he spoke to him in the grove, that's in the last of the words, the same words that he sees there, Joseph Smith. And then shall they weep because of their iniquities, and then shall I boast because they persecuted all things. So, everybody is seeing what a beast they wish to be. There are survivors among them in Jerusalem. And then shall a nation to indeed, they that have known no law, as part of the first resurrection, or it was tolerable for them. And the first resurrection of the Bible. Are the nations today? No law. Well, half the world knows no law today. There are something to rest in that. Literally, there is no law. That is, there is no appeal. There is no protest. There is no discussion. There is no question. Since the law is not by my reason. So you're not responsible, after all, for not receiving, the gospel, or of course, there have been written into every nation in the world, back today, like Fathers, Liberal Fathers, and Constitution, and the Christian students, all of them get their commands, their friendly constitution. It's what the official does and what he says, and if you have any views, if you know what's going on, even in a relatively civilized way, where it's a civilized country, like we are, in some way. But, in a relatively modern climate like that, you know, in the end, you are utterly helpless. Anything you ask for, any request you make, anything you put forward, any adjustment, nothing. It all depends on the limits and the people. That's all. I think you have an absolute say. He's not only the law, but he doesn't even think about that. But most people, the gospel has an instinct. It is tolerable for them. They will have it be part of the first resurrection. because they have been guilty of rejecting it the way the rest of the world does. And then, and something can't be done. Now we come to the situation because we need something. It's so different from anything we have and have no place in the heart for the person of men. Well, that's the most unconfused. We would say that would be utterly dull. It's possible. We would die of boredom in 20 minutes in a world in which you couldn't say, we didn't have any crime on this TV. That's where we would make it exciting. There's no plot if you don't have the opposition, if you don't have the villain there, if you don't have all sorts of murder. What can you do if you're going to sit around here and say you've been bound, having no place in our heart? He's no longer allowed to climb there and be tested. They're not being fired in prison, is it like when you come to something to go, as I say? What, not even tension? Where's the fun? It's inconceivable, I say, from our present position. That shows how totally we are involved to another way of existence. We can't go on existing forever like that. That's not the way we've been alive since the 30s, so how do you suspend off foolish temptations and powers of that stuff. But it's inconceivable. We can't imagine a life that is about self, competitive, and vigor. We think life is to be a struggle to express the character. God gave us everything, he has given us as a gift, that we spend our days fighting, playing, teaching, that's the most. We think that's strengthening character. Well, that's how far we move in God. Would it be possible that we can have other kinds of fight? Well, don't worry, it's no. But then the Lord comes in with glory. That's something that it will not be possible if we are now. But the whole thing, this is the difference, though, in the 56th verse. And at that day, when I shall come in my glory, shall be the parable fulfilled, which I spoke concerning the faith in 10 verses. When he comes in his glory, you're going to see something else. You're going to see how wrong you were, how mistaken you were, how completely off you were in everything. You know, and then he tells us about the terrible culture shock that's going to happen next week. Absolutely annihilating culture shock. We'll be raped violently from one state of being to another. They that are wise and have received the truth, they will have been preconditioned to it. They will have been trained to receive it from that state. Then they will have said to abide the day. It's not a wonderful thing. Talk about a real culture shock there. In order to receive it, not to be consumed, but to receive the truth. And if you receive the truth, take the Holy Ghost from your guide, and do not be deceived by the things of this world. Such beings receive the vision and abide today, that which you can take it. Then you can take it, you can abide it. The others will simply be bowed down, withered, wiped out. They shall be doomed down, cast into fire. They shall not be deemed out of that to the fire who has prepared, but shall abide the day. But that is the only thing that is not. It's going to move from one place to another. Not by imperceptible degrees, for the Lord comes like that, and you want the mountains to cover. Don't try to be like that. They that are wise and have received the truth in advance and been talking with mothers ahead of time, they're taking the Holy Spirit for their guide, and not been redeemed. They shall not be tuned down and cast in the fire. Notice the rest. It's mowed down. Okay. Then the word shall be given to them. A new order of power comes in. They will take over. Notice the whole world as far as that goes. The earth shall be given to them for an inheritance. It goes into theirs now. And they shall multiply and wax strong. And their children shall grow up without fear of the salvation. For it is not being saved. But you don't want to understand that. This is the thing that says that's what I'm here. I'm pretty sure of that. The coming of the Lord will introduce them the same way of life on the earth. And the faith that prepares, to prepare for it by a natural transition, will carry on. And of course, you kind of actually in a spiritually strange alien to that of the outside world, and you have to be very careful with it. It's right, because it is alien, it's not strange. And to that degree, offensive. But the others will not be around. They shall take over the world, multiply and wax strong, and so it shall go. Their children shall grow up without fear of salvation. Moving right from mortality to eternal life and out of it. That will be something. How? For the Lord shall be in their midst. For he is there, and he will have no bodies as far as the people. For the Lord is 59 days. For Lord shall be in the midst, and his glory shall be upon them, and he will be their king and their lawgiver. All other laws and principles should be preparatory for that. He tied us over to prepare for that. And the Lord said, he will be the law. He will be the lawgiver. He will be the king. And then we're told, in the 60th verse, that these revelations are consequent to the Joseph Smith's saying in the New Testament. He went beyond the New Testament and the 61st verse in Matthew, the little apocalypse saying in the chapter of Mark, that is the chapter of Mark, that deals with this thing, the Lord talked to the apocalypse. And they asked, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? He told Matthew, which was in the 61st verse of the Resurrection. They wanted to know what was going to happen too. So the Lord still believed that. Put them in from it. From now on, the revelations after this are going to be used there for their time. For this, I say, is filling them in. And up to this point, the saints are still in the system. Not beyond this time. The translation of the New Testament was the benefit of the Jews. So we get to 50 verse, which I see a change, but now that's bad. What did Joseph Smith mean by translating? It's a very interesting sentence there. The translation is to be prepared for things to come. We need to be in the proper sense. Did we read the translation of the New Testament? The translation is again. Well, no more than translation of the definition of translation is the translation. That's what we're doing in the book of that time. Translation is the translation of any words of what you think the original author has in mind. Of course, that's what we've been using here. That's what we've been using here to build. There's a meeting of mind. All in the mind of the first person. There is, are there any good people? Well, that way they're all. Yes, this one, in the next section, says, well, no, I haven't done that one. So we get to that. First of all, yes. He's going on now. Now, 62 follows. He takes up the section of war. He's not going to say he's dead to his son. For then I say unto you, great things await you. Well, that was an undertaking. Now we talk about war, 63, he mentioned this before. So there's war and rumors of war. Now the wars of the 1830s at that time were all bloody civil wars, they were all local wars, but they were quite bloody and violent, and they were all remarkable for having permanent success. More permanent than those of the Great World Wars had fallen, so we went back to square one, and we're just about ready to start war before the war was done. But these revolutionary wars of the 30s, we went down the list the other day, in every country, left a very permanent change to the old order of the old monarchy, divine right of kings and the rest of it, was out. The wars ended at this time in this country, now in the 64th verse, in eastern lands, and since in the western countries, which is exactly true, of course. In the western countries, and how far away? Not bloody Kansas, not the dark and bloody ground, in Missouri, as far as that goes, they were to be taken over by the mobs after the saints left. No, the Lord had other things in mind, so he said, go west, and go to the saints. The older man. Start planning, he says, for the final refuge, a place of safety for the saints, a policy you can use for. 66 verse, yeah. It shall be a true Zion, no place for the wicked, the glory and care of the Lord shall be there. There the saints, the glory and the care of the Lord. The only place in the world on the nation war, the only place in the world will be there, where a million factors, the church, the church, the church, shall be gathered unto it out of every nation. The only people that shall not be at war, one with another. So you see that some still people feel that you can do something. The same, you know, the part of it. And here's an astonishing thing, the wicked will not dare go up to battle against the city of Zion, and Zion is terrible. So how then, with me? Well, everybody has them, as far as that's concerned. And then the sounds of everlasting joy. That is the whole thing is completely possible. How can it possibly be that there be a little bit of heaven and this absolutely depraved and united earth you can building up from there? And she says, from now on, for the whole humanity, Zion gets brighter and better. So how would that be possible? Well, this is still the prophetic teaching. And notice, I guess, still a prophetic teaching, because he tells us in the second verse, don't tell anybody about this here. We'll be moving to the future, and he throws the first one, and don't forget this. He says, don't tell anybody about this. And if you have done enough to put you in a position of strength, that if you're not considering the need to pursue, you'd be in real trouble. You know, depending on the good, keep things from going around into the world, and don't succeed in the union if you are accomplishing it with work in the eyes of the people, in the eyes of your enemies, that they will not know your work until you've accomplished the thing I command you. I have to do certain things in preparation for anybody else who knows about this. That's why you can be asking for trouble. Ask you for the question. Don't do it. Live my way. Remember, come to church first.
Thank you.